It was a few minutes before the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month. I stood at the window of my room, looking up Northumberland Avenue towards Trafalgar Square, waiting for Big Ben to tell that the war was over. My mind strayed back across the scouring years to the scene and emotions of the night at the Admiralty, when I listened for these same chimes in order to give the signal of war against Germany to our fleets and squadrons across the world. And now all was over. The unarmed and untrained island nation, who with no defense but its navy had faced unquestioningly the strongest manifestation of military power in human record, had completed its task. Our country had emerged from the ordeal alive and safe, its vast possessions intact, its war effort still waxing, its institutions unshaken, its people and empire united as never before. The minutes passed. I was conscious of reaction rather than elation. The material purposes on which one's work had been centered, every process of thought on which one had lived, crumbled into nothing. The whole vast business of supply, the ever-growing output, the careful boards, the secret future plans, but yesterday the whole duty of life, all at a stroke, vanished like a nightmare dream, leaving a void behind. My mind mechanically persisted in exploring the problems of demobilization. What would to happen to our 3 million munition workers? What would they make now? How would the roaring factories be converted? How, in fact, are swords beaten into plowshares? How long would it take to bring the armies home? What would they do when they got home? We had, of course, a demobilization plan for the Ministry of Munitions. It had been carefully worked out, but it had played no part in our thoughts. Now it must be put into operation. The levers must be pulled, full steam astern. The Munitions Council must meet without delay. And then suddenly the first stroke of the chime. I looked again at the broad street beneath me. It was deserted. From the portals of one of the large hotels, absorbed by government departments, darted the slight figure of a girl clerk, distractedly gesticulating, while another stroke resounded. Then from all sides, men and women came scurrying into the street. Streams of people poured out of all the buildings. The bells of London began to clash. Northumberland Avenue was now crowded with people in hundreds, nay, thousands, rushing hither and thither in a frantic manner, shouting and screaming with joy. I could see that Trafalgar Square was already swarming. Around me, in our very headquarters, in the Hotel Metropole, disorder had broken out. Doors banged, feet clattered down corridors. Everyone rose from the desk and cast aside pen and paper. All bounds were broken. The tumult grew. It grew like a gale, but from all sides simultaneously. The street was now a seething mass of humanity. Flags appeared as if by magic. Streams of men and women flowed from the embankment. They mingled with torrents pouring down the Strand on their way to acclaim the king. Almost before the last stroke of the clock had died away, the strict, war-straitened, regulated streets of London had become a triumphant pandemonium. At any rate, it was clear that no more work would be done that day. The curtain falls upon the long front in France and Flanders. The soothing hands of time and nature, the swift repair of peaceful industry, have already almost effaced the crater fields and the battle lines, which in a broad belt from the Vosges to the sea lately blackened the smiling fields of France. The ruins are rebuilt. The riven trees are replaced by new plantations. Only the cemeteries, the monuments, and stunted steeples, with here and there a mouldering trench or huge mine crater lake, assail the traveller with the fact that 25 millions of soldiers fought here and 12 millions shed their blood or perished in the greatest of all human contentions less than 20 years ago. Merciful oblivion draws his veils. The crippled limp away, the mourners fall back into the sad twilight of memory. New youth is here to claim its rights, and the perennial stream flows forward, even in the battle zone, as if the tale were all a dream. Is this the end? Is it to be merely a chapter in a cruel and senseless story? Will a new generation in their turn be immolated to square the black accounts of Teuton and Gaul? Will our children bleed and gasp again in devastated lands? Or will there spring from the very fires of conflict that reconciliation of the three giant combatants, which would unite their genius and secure to each in safety and freedom a share in rebuilding the glory of Europe?
Winston Churchill. His reflections upon the hour of armistice, 11 a.m., the 11th of November, 1918.